Hey, I'm Alan McGuire.
And I'm Jean Sutton.
And this is Roast Chestnuts, a podcast where we give made-for-TV Christmas movies the attention they deserve.
And today we're discussing a 2005 Lifetime movie called Recipe for a Perfect Christmas, starring Christine Baranski, Carly Pope, and Bobby Cannavale, the actor who is married to Rose Byrne now and somewhat famous. Yeah. And we're discussing that movie today with Bobby Hearn of No Monster Club.
Thank you. A band you should check out.
Yeah, two different Bobbies, so there's going to be a lot of confusion here.
I'm not the guy in the film.
Yeah. If you think we're talking about someone who's fictional, it's probably Bobby Cannavale. And so the movie stars Carly Pope as the lead. And
did you know Carly Pope before? Oh, sorry, you were about to say.
From Popular.
Yeah.
Great TV series.
Popular.
Yeah, ended on a... I prefer it to My So-Called Life or whatever that was called.
I've never seen My So-Called Life, but yeah. I was definitely a Popular. And she was the one I related to out of the two in Popular.
She was the Gotti sister. So it's about two sisters whose parents marry and they've become stepsisters. And one's Miss Popular and the other is Miss Emo Gotti. Real sarcastic.
Yeah.
And it's early noughties. And it ended on a cliffhanger at season two.
Did it?
Yes.
What happened?
One of them gets hit by a car and then just ends.
Christ.
Oh. I'd say the writers just went, fuck this.
Well, they only got two series.
Yeah.
It's not too good.
Well, it was good.
It was iconic. A lot of people remember it.
Yeah. Sounds like the premise of Sister, except...
And it's a little bit Sweet Valley High as well, but with stepsisters instead.
Mm. And remember Sister No Way by Siobhan Parkinson, that Irish writer?
No.
It had, ahead of its time. Same plot. Mm-hmm. One wore docks, one had blonde hair, and wore a bit of Laura Ashley, set in the 90s. But the book had two different books in it. So one side of the book was the other story. And then when you turned it upside down, the other side of the book was the other girl's perspective.
Wow. That's good.
That is ahead of its time.
Yeah, it got you really involved.
Ali Smith totally jacked that for How to Be Both.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Siobhan should get on to her. Yeah. Sisters, No Way. And I think it was Sisters, comma, No Way, exclamation mark.
Nice.
So that was good.
I wonder if Carly Pope, because if you Google Carly Pope, I feel like Kobe Smulders stole her career because they look like identical twins.
I have no idea who Carly Pope, that was the first, I looked her up and I hadn't heard of anything she's been in. Yeah. That's how bad I am.
God
Kobe
bless.
Smulders has her face and voice.
Lived a sheltered life.
You know, from How I Met Your Mother?
Yeah. And also from Jack Reacher, Never Look Back or Never Go Back.
She's great, like action Carly Pope.
Mm.
Yeah.
And she's also in the Marvel movies.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Yeah. Not Carly Pope, the other lady who stole her career.
She's
She also had cancer while she was shooting How I Met Your Mother. She had ovarian cancer or something.
Oh, really?
Like something really tough, So
didn't know that.
Yeah. So
that's Kobe Smulders, who's not in this film.
She's not in this film. She might be in a Lifetime film or a Hallmark. We'll have a look.
We'll check it out.
Yeah. So she plays J.J. Jennings.
Mm-hmm.
And she is working in a magazine called Glow. Terrible name for a magazine because Jennifer Lopez's perfume was called Glow. And if there's anything that owns the term Glow in the noughties,
which
in
came
this
first?
World.
The perfume or this film?
I think the perfume might have come
probably.
First. Glow. I think the perfume did.
She doesn't own the word Glow, come on.
J-Lo owns the word Glow.
I feel like in that space.
Yeah, so call it a New York magazine Glow. I was just in the word. Like J-Lo was huge right at that time.
Yeah, that was the peak when she was the triple threat. Yeah.
No, you might say peak. I would say that peak plateaued and she's basically Mount Everest of people. But
she was quieter for a while. They slam her in this. So maybe the glow was intentional.
Yeah, maybe someone had a run-in with her.
They do have a little discussion about her later on.
Oh.
So
yeah, we'll get to it though. Yeah, because I remember taking a note.
I did recognise Tanya from Mamma Mia though, the mother.
Yeah, she's great.
She's like I was like, how do I recognise her face? And she's got different colour hair, but
so
he was the same woman.
Christine Baranski of The Good Wife, Diane Lockhart, plays JJ's mom who comes into town and upsets JJ's
life. She's a tempest.
And JJ is working as the assistant to a food critic in this magazine. Mm-hmm. And then she gets promoted out of nowhere because turns out the food critic they hired is a pig.
Very topical.
Yeah, ahead of its time.
Yeah.
And he gets fired, which isn't very topical. Very few of them got fired.
Mm-hmm.
So she gets suddenly promoted into the job, but her mom's after moving in and there's a guy who has an Italian restaurant across the road that's run down, no one's calling into it. He needs JJ to review to get him some blood into that restaurant. And so it's about JJ's career, JJ's relationship with her mother and JJ's burgeoning relationship with Bobby Cannavale. So that's it. in That's summary.
How we start.
Yeah.
A couple of things from the start. Christine Baranski arrives into town and she seems to arrive on a freighter. It doesn't look like she's supposed to be a cruise ship, but it looks like some kind of freighter she's arrived in on, like the any of the usual suspects.
She was working as a dancer on it or something.
Yeah, like she was Kaiser Soze and she's killing everybody on the freighter and now she's leaving. And then she hails a taxi in the most badass way ever.
Yeah.
Where she just, Carly Pope, I watched this one with my wife. So I watched One of Every Three with my wife. That's the deal we have. So Carly Pope's trying to hail a taxi and not even putting up her hand to do
she's
it. Just
taxi.
Just saying taxi.
Yeah.
And you cut, smash cut to Christine Baranski, who sticks out her hand very confidently, causes a taxi to do a skidding handbrake turn and
like
arrive back
top
at her.
Gear.
Yeah. And then when we come back to him, she's solved that man's life. Encourage him to like get in contact with his estranged wife. She's just a phenom.
Yeah.
Also, you can travel by freight boat to various across the Atlantic and things.
But she's supposed to be like a cruise ship dancer, isn't she?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is supposed to be a cruise ship.
But optionally, like there is, you can do that. It's just, are you the type of woman who wants to be the only woman on a freight ship? But there is an option to do that.
Yeah.
I personally wouldn't choose it.
No.
I have looked it up and it's almost as expensive as flying. So
yeah. And you've dinner with the lads.
Yeah.
You know, you have to be the type of person looking for material for a book to do that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
A book that's already been written like probably 20 times. How does she get into the apartment, the mom? That's
She speaks Spanish to the super's wife.
Okay.
That's where the J-Lo slamming comes in. Because as she lets her in, they're walking in together.
Yeah.
And she's like, I'm glad you left Ben Affleck. And now she's with Mark Antony.
Yeah.
So they have to actually, it could be a genuine, we're taking over the world glow.
Was she with Mark Antony then, that era?
Yeah, she would have been, was she? Well, they say Affleck and Mark Antony. I'm not sure anybody else has
then
that,
it was, yeah.
She's probably like a producer on this film or something and wanted to be a reference. Or was, I don't know.
J-Lo at this point in her life had left the TV world long behind.
Yeah.
Although she's back on TV now.
Yeah.
But everyone
looking
is.
Younger. Yeah.
Oh, she always looks younger.
She's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I love J-Lo.
Back to JJ.
And JJ gets the job and immediately is facing aggro and work while balancing her mother. Her mother isn't that annoying.
She's pretty bad. She's really annoying.
Is she?
Yeah.
So she's very friendly. Everybody likes her immediately. Which can be annoying
she's a bit
to,
loud
certain,
and
to
crass,
certain people.
But
no, but if she just turned up in your apartment and was like, I live here now.
It's your mother.
Yeah.
You'd probably investigate why earlier than Cardi Pope did.
She did, yeah.
Like, ma'am, why are you living in my apartment?
Yeah. Well, the best part is JJ goes out for the night and comes back and her doctor boyfriend comes into the house and is really rude to Christine Baranski. And is like, oh, I spend loads of time in the ER, and then JJ comes back and the mum's like, Miles is cheating on you.
He's cheating on you. And he's like, yeah, I am.
And JJ goes, that's my first boyfriend in over a year and a half. And you're like, well, you're well shot of him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then that was just kind of the end of that. Like there was no, like she never kind of, you know, called him or anything to say, like, explain yourself or anything. It was just like, okay, that's the end of him. Now let's move on to...
Yeah, JJ gets no time to grieve.
Yeah. And in those films, normally the bad boyfriend gets a few scenes, but he just got the one, so he's probably quite disappointed in that. Maybe there was more written out, but you normally get a few scenes.
He'd come back and he was like the meat being served up in the restaurant or something.
Actually, when she went to that Indian restaurant or Moroccan restaurant, wherever it was, and all that stag knight came in, I thought that was him back. One of the stag looked like him.
Oh, yeah.
It
could have just reused
the same actor.
Yeah, but it wasn't.
They're kind of like the gay stag.
Yeah.
And
it was like a weird moment there where it's like, who's getting married? It's like, we are. It's like, woo.
Yeah, how progressive.
I guess 2005.
I read a review of the movie on Amazon and the woman who wrote the review said, I think she gave it 3 stars. She said she would have given it 5 stars if it wasn't for the gay stag scene. And because of that, she's just going to throw it straight into the trash. And it was like, but she still gave it 3 stars.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Like, it was in the movie for 30 seconds, maybe less.
Like 10 seconds.
I kind of felt like there was a lot of Ricky and the Flash vibes here. Did you see that movie with Meryl Streep?
No.
Oh, great one. Not great at all. But Meryl Streep plays a rocker, but she's not very successful. And she's a rocker boyfriend. But it turns out she left her family years ago to pursue this being a rock star kind of vibe. So she wears leather trousers and she comes back for her daughter's wedding. Her daughter's been left at the altar and the family don't want her there. They've moved on, but like they need her there as well. And Ricky kind of needs to confront her past and what she did. And it's about Ricky shows up and injects new life into the family and they face truths. So it's got a bit of that. And Meryl Streep is, she's not Meryl Streep in it, I'll give her that much. But she's good. She has crimped hair.
Ooh.
And yeah, it reminds me of this, like all these stage kind of waspy people facing their comeuppance, or, you know, realizing that maybe they shouldn't be assholes.
There is like a succession of waspy people getting their comeuppance one after the other in this film. Because first there's this scummy sexual harassment critic. And then there's the boyfriend.
Yeah.
And then later on, there's her, Carrie Pope's assistant. Gets her comeuppance
as
well.
So her assistant gets really annoyed. She gets the job. Yeah. And she's like, how'd she get the job? And she kind of doesn't sabotage it throughout, but isn't a very supportive assistant. Isn't doing much assisting.
She overhears her saying at one point that she's having trouble writing this article.
Yeah.
And she's like thinking, maybe I'll write my own article. And then she kind of helps set the situation, or she's just like taking the same kind of opportunity that she had, like that the writer had taken. And she like is like villainized for it or something. They're kind of like, how dare she?
I know, I would reprimand her a lot if I was in a workplace situation. Yeah, but she also wasn't that, like there's leaning in and then there's like, that's not your job.
Yeah.
Stop trying to show someone under the bus.
Yeah. So I have a question to ask you as someone who's worked in the media.
Yeah.
So Carrie Pope is an assistant. As far as I know, has never written anything for that magazine. They just overhear her knowing what is in an appetizer.
She does a Sherlock thing.
No,
on
she could have been doing writing for them up along.
As an assistant to
panels. Critic? So when you write an art, you look at like, say, a food critic, and then they'll have like three things of wine or something in it, or panels, event panels, or what's on, what other movies. An assistant or someone would have written that junior down.
Oh,
because
really?
The other person would have been working on too much. So like they check the facts and stuff, but you would do a bit of writing as an assistant. You'd be doing a bit of editing.
Okay.
We don't really have that structure in Ireland. People are too cheap. We don't have the money and the infrastructure. Because I think assisting, the role of being an assistant is a really good way to train someone in any job, but we don't have a culture of appreciating that here. Like they've gotten rid of sub-editors in a lot of places.
Yeah.
I've never had a sub-editor really, which is terrifying. But when people talk about like I being meeting people from different other parts of life and they're like, oh, like the role of the sub-editor, and I'm like, what role? You know, like they just say there's sub-editors in London papers and stuff, but yeah, what online changed everything. So an assistant would get a bit of writing and she probably wouldn't get that role straight away, but this is a movie.
Okay, so it is a semi-realistic career path.
Yeah, like
you. The reason I'm asking you in particular is because you were very critical of Rory in the new Gilmore Girls episodes.
Oh yeah,
and how
she's
bad
the
she
laziest
was at pitching and stuff.
Yeah, like you're one. Also, she's only doing. They have one magazine issue they've given her. Usually, what would happen is you'd hire someone to come in for that, like a freelancer to come in and do it for the month if you're in between issues, or editors, but. I think it was a bit more like she's in the office every day. She can do the job. She's observed the job. She's shadowed the job.
Didn't they have that party at the start to announce this English guy? But at the last minute, he said all this weird stuff and like he fell down drunk. And then they were just like, they had to announce somebody because they'd call these people together. Was that what happened?
They were having a party. It was their having a party anyway. They could have been having their Christmas party early on.
I thought it was to announce somebody, you know?
I think they were announcing him as part of it.
Okay. Yeah, he was just after arriving. Also, like, you wouldn't really, if it was a January issue, people notoriously don't give a shit about their January issues. So, like, you would have given her the job and they would have given her one issue while you hunted for someone else.
Yeah.
So she would have had acting.
They did say that to her, didn't they? Like,
yeah.
You got one the previous episode. But that's, like, the central concept of this whole movie is that she's got, like, 3 weeks to write a restaurant review and she, like, can't do that.
Yeah, so she'd have the restaurant pages and it takes her ages to do that. Maybe that was acceptable years ago. Like I always say, the only time to have been a journalist is the 90s because you would have been writing one or two things.
Yeah.
You would have been fighting. You would have been drunken on coke the rest of the time. You would have had an amazing time. Like I always like, I wish I worked in magazines in the 90s and people who worked in the 90s would tell you that as well. The internet really screwed stuff up and the writing that much, taking that long to write something, that's not really except, and I mean, where it should be though, because stuff should be let breed. But unfortunately, like when you give out about the quality of writing in an Irish paper, an Irish publication, it's because everyone's under so much pressure. And then you're also looking at the lack of new blood and I don't know about food. Like, do you like food writing?
No.
Reading it?
Well, I always read it because it normally makes me laugh. Just, it's so like, they obviously have to squeeze whatever amount of words out of this thing. And it's like, okay, I had a nice dinner, but they stretch that out as far as they can. And it's funny to see them like, kind of like, what else can I write? Well, I guess the atmosphere.
Like, yeah. I don't think we have an legislature.
But that's about it.
Yeah. I like
I used to hate A.A. Gill's column. I never got through a full A.A. Gill restaurant review.
They could be good. Yeah. Like, I don't know if I've read a good one in Ireland. Like, wanted to read it, finished reading it.
Hmm.
So I don't know. There are some really good historic American examples, like the 50s and 60s. And I don't know. It's a weird field. Some people love food writing. I'm not huge into it. So, but like, I don't, the idea of taking that long to write a food review.
3 weeks. And in the end, she writes it in 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And it's about 500 words long. And she's been stressing over it for the whole month. And it's just like, it wasn't such a hard job at all.
Yeah.
She really made a song and dance about it.
Like. Yeah. But like, that would have been, now you'd have to have stuff done pretty fast. And also nowadays you're liaising with brands. So if you look at the Irish Times, now doing a big push on brand storytelling and things, like they had an event in Roberta's. This is just me sneaking on Twitter. did a big event in Roberta's where brands were invited and stuff like that. So the journalists would be working a lot on native content. And I think they had a Food Monthly issue there recently, and that was under some new stream they're doing. So the food writers will be doing, you'd be working on specials. And if you're a food editor, you might be sourcing recipes. So that could be some of your job, is ringing up publishing companies, trying to get exclusives, chasing high-res imagery. So there is a lot to do, but like writing a review, you can bash it out, to be honest. Mm. If you're like, you know, if it's not for the New Yorker, like, just like had the meat, it was fine.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think she, like, the job thing didn't bother me that much. The Gilmore Girls was horrendous. Like, one of my friends really liked it, and I got offended that I hated it so much. And I was like, it's just, you don't know how bad she is at her job. Just that going in and just not having a pitch was so annoying. And I love the way she took their pitch that they gave her.
Yeah.
I had a meeting, I met up with a girl recently, and like, she was kind of struggling in her career, and I didn't so much as say try something else, because that's rude apparently. So but like, gave her, I was like, oh, you should do this and this, like, you know, this is a good idea, maybe that. And she just wrote down all my ideas. This is a bit like, I was like, that's not how it should work.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, I did not like Rory. I would prefer JJ as an employee than Rory, even though, like, so in the movie towards the end, she loses her files and her mother basically turns the computer on and off and fucks everything up.
Like, that's not how a computer breaks, by the way, how that happened. The screen just starts, like,
it feels frazzled.
Just like some kind of glitch techno producers kind of backdrop. I was also wondering,
because like, she's in the office 5 days a week, you know, working normal days. And then she's just working on this one article. Then she's going home every night and she's tapping away on the laptop, and her mom's like driving her crazy because she can't do her article. But like, I don't understand what she's doing in her office and what she's doing at home. And if they're connected in some way. In 2005, would she have been on her intranet or what?
You had intranet then.
Intranet, though.
You wouldn't have intranet. Maybe she had like a Gmail she was using. Was Gmail then?
Then when the laptop at home gets frazzled, how does she lose all her stuff on her work? Like, I was looking at it just wondering what the hell was going on.
Yeah, there's some vintage internet concerns there to explore.
And if she's just doing this article, how is she working 40 hours a week in this big office and then going home and having to work overtime at home, and like, while her mom's exercising to the 12 Days of Christmas?
Oh, yeah. She does push-ups to them and sings them as well.
Yeah.
Very limber.
The most annoying Christmas song of all time. And that's what really made me hate her, that scene. And the set designer did a great job, because whoever designed it managed to get like a Santa doing push-ups or pull-ups. So she's got a singing Santa doing the 12 Days of Christmas.
Doesn't she look great, though?
Who?
Christine Baranski.
Sure.
Yeah, she looks fab, I think. I loved how the food editor at the start, who his sexual perversion is exposed. So the editor of the magazine walks into the bathroom and his girlfriend leaves crying, and he lets the girlfriend continue out walking while he like takes on your man and beats him up and like fires him. And then when he comes out, he's like, I let him go. And your man's like, why? And he's like, I didn't want the lawsuit. And then just kisses his girlfriend on the forehead and leaves it at that. And like, she has no line.
Yeah.
And it was just really, I was like, okay, that's that kind of movie. Yeah. But
at least
then,
he did stand up for his girlfriend, though. And
yeah, he did. Yeah,
he says to the women as well, well, aren't you a delightful pair of cream puffs? I hope you're ready to work some overtime.
Yeah, the pervy guy. Like that. Yeah. Oh, yeah, like immediately he's like ready to sexually harass.
Yes. Yeah.
And he's got the classic British accent. Like, it's like perfect villain.
Yeah. And he's got like a crushed purple velvet jacket and like a slightly Austin Powers-ish.
Yeah.
It looked like a shit party.
Yeah, it did.
So Bobby Cannavale then.
Cannavale.
Yeah. He's across the road and his landlord is a Russian guy named Dmitry. And the rent is overdue. And Bobby's like, not this. Bobby in the movie is like, I can pay you. I can pay you by the end of the month. Just give me some time. And your man's like, that's not how business works.
Yeah.
So Bobby is then shows up at JJ's office the next day after meeting her outside. He's like, I need you to review the restaurant. And she's like, yeah, you can review it if you take my mom out.
Yeah.
That was weird.
Oh, before, there's one thing where Bobby Cannavale's work, Bobby Cannavale is walking down the street with his brother-in-law, who's also his business manager.
It's
and it's supposed to be a week before Christmas, but it's clearly June. And there's heat shimmers behind them and everybody's wearing t-shirts. And I just thought they could have done a better job. Just put everybody in a coat just for 5 minutes just to walk down the street, I thought.
There's a line from the brother-in-law as well where he says, as your brother-in-law, my heart bleeds for you, but as your accountant, it's my ulcer that's bleeding. I was like, what the hell? Like, why is that line there? What's that even?
Then Christine Vrinsky and the daughter's friends all go out for dinner, but the daughter, they don't say that she's Christine's like, oh, she's the food critic. And she shouldn't have said that. Like, daughter's like, no, that's not how I do this. But the mother wants to get the freebies, which I loved. I was like, fuck it, go.
But she's also never done it before. And she's like, this isn't what we do. And it's like, you know, this is your first assignment.
Yeah. Mm. Welcome to new media, JJ. Where if you're a journalist, you're like, arrive at the hotel and you're like, I'm Wish. You don't say your name.
What does JJ stand for?
Oh, Janis Joplin.
So yeah, she comes into work, embarrasses her. She comes into work and starts singing a super problematic reggae version of Good King Wenceslas. Yeah.
Good King Wenceslas.
And they walk past the only person of colour in the entire film who has no lines.
The taxi driver was...
Oh, the taxi driver did. That's right. But they're singing, it's problematic AF, I think.
Yeah. She's like, have you heard the new reggae version of Good King Wenceslas?
Yeah. And the guy's like, yeah, of course I have.
Yeah, and he starts singing along. And every line just ends with mon.
Yeah.
Good King Wenceslas, mon. It's not oh God.
On the Feast of Stephen, mon. Really bad.
Yeah.
And then they go to a Japanese restaurant and someone says something about the two friends being Jewish. Does Christine say that? And JJ's pal, Red Hood office pal, gets annoyed at Christine for flirting with her boyfriend.
Yeah. Fair enough, I think.
Yeah.
He was all over.
She shows some face like she's not
she has, I don't think it's too much of an exaggeration to say the worst hair I've ever seen in a film. Her red-haired friend.
Oh, very bad, yeah.
And a green velvet jacket. A lot of velvet jackets in this as well, actually.
The shit she, you like, notice.
My wife actually noticed about all the velvet. So I was seriously like, a lot of velvet jackets.
Christmas, you know?
Yeah.
And then JJ gets your man to meet her and the mother in a bookshop.
Yeah.
So Bobby can ask Christine Barinski out and they go to a bookshop and this daughter is just really bitchy. She goes, there's your magazines. I'm going to go off and look for cookbooks. Mm-hmm. And you're like, so what if Christine likes magazines? But she says it really kind of mean.
Yeah.
And then she pushes Bobby Cannavale in
her
direction.
She works for a magazine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
JJ's got issues.
Yeah.
And she pushes him towards her and Christine Brunski and your man talk about Charles and Camilla.
Such sick Camilla Burns.
Yes, she like slags her looks.
Not for her.
And says she's like something from a racy French novel.
Yeah.
So that
a lot of period details in this actually.
Yeah, because Charles and Camilla would have been like properly courting.
And the J-Lo reference. I also noticed that Christine Brunski, when she was doing the exercising, she had an iPod mini.
Oh.
Which is very 2005.
Oh, I love my little iPod now, but I dropped it in a pint of water. Mm. And they're dead now, aren't they? Won't get fixed.
You never get a replacement, yeah?
No.
For some reason.
I should give it to a museum.
Yeah, a little museum.
Say it with Bono's. Bobby takes Christine Brinsky to karaoke, and she's great at it.
She's
amazing. They just get her Mamma Mia.
Yeah. Because
it's part of her showreel.
Probably. Had you ever heard that song before?
No, and I looked up the lyrics, couldn't find them.
No, they said it's a Pat Benatar song.
Pap.
Pat Benatar.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, like Love is a Battlefield.
Yeah,
but I'd never heard it.
And, yeah.
But Christine Bransky was blasting it.
Yeah.
She knew that song inside out.
One of the lyrics is like Rants in My Heart, which is like a title of a Meg Cabot book. So like that just did up all my feed or my Google results. I was like, I'm not bothered going on the third results here.
Yeah.
Then the gay stag party happens. So JJ goes to a restaurant and orders all the food. And they're like, oh, is this all for you? Because she wants to test every dish. Yeah. So she makes a gay stag party come in and eat with her, which was pretty sound of her. Like, what a great thing to happen to you as a stag party.
And the expenses account of a magazine.
Yeah. They don't exist anymore.
So then Christine Bransky's trying to find some jobs because
that's hard.
Because you have to retire from cruise ship dancing when you're 45.
But isn't there a lot of kind of ambiguity around this? Because someone says about her meal ticket dying.
Her husband.
Yeah. Did she go do that after the husband died?
Yeah, but like maybe she wasn't on cruise ships at all. Maybe she was working. Maybe she was on them with a man.
Oh, maybe.
I don't know, I felt there was something...
Well, a deep reading of this.
Yeah, I really felt for Christine Barinski's character and the job hunting was off. Like, it was just really sad. Like, she couldn't get a job. She had no... Like,
no.
You know, she wants to be a receptionist and they were like asking her about computer skills. I just felt it was really sad. I'd say it's happening to a lot of people around the world and it really breaks my heart.
But when the daughter is looking for her mom on Christmas Eve or the 23rd or whatever, and she finally... gets to her friend's house and her friend says, oh, I've given her a couple of my shifts or whatever. So she goes to find her at the pole dancing place.
Yeah.
And then someone's asking for a drink, but the mom is like having this conversation and she says to the guy who's like looking for his drink, she says, your man's like, move your ass. And she's like, my ass just retired. I quit. But she's working someone else's job. She can't retire on their behalf. Like, what an asshole move again. She's like covering for someone and she quits for them. Like, this is that woman's job. I thought that was pretty bad.
That's so good.
Yeah. It's like, where's my whiskey and scotch? She's like, move your ass. Great line.
What do we think of her friend? Like long grey hair, denim jacket with a patch on the back. That's pretty strong look, I think.
Which friend was this?
The friend that gave her the shifts that she met in the...
Oh yeah, I liked her. I liked the look of her.
Yeah. Don't get to know her that well.
She looked like the type of woman that would drink a beer.
Mm. Oh. I looked her up and she has only been in like 8 things ever. She's like a Broadway person and then just like... seems to go to Vancouver every couple of years to be in one thing and then comes back.
Was this film made in Canada?
Oh, well, all these films are made in Canada. Okay. Oh, well, in Vancouver, yeah, specifically.
Okay.
Might go to Vancouver in the summer to see the ones that are going to be made next year now.
Wow.
Just scope them out. Then, remember, your man shows up, Bobby Cannavale. Also, why doesn't JJ just go eat food with him? Go eat the food, eat the pasta he brings over. Just get the review in.
Hmm.
She can only have three lunches a day.
She's procrastinating to the max here.
Yeah.
And it really frustrates me as I'm a serial procrastinator. So I was like watching this and I was too invested and I was like, just fucking do it, JJ. Just do it. Like your life's going to be easier. I felt like the white guardian angel talking to me.
Yeah.
He's like, just do it, Jean. So that was just really annoying. Like just... go there for breakfast, like, get the food.
Well, then when she eventually goes over, the power has been cut, there's works going on outside.
And that's then what happens when you procrastinate.
Exactly.
Things exasperate.
And then the next time she goes over, when she finally gets to taste the food, he starts feeding her like a baby. Like, he won't just let, like
tiny little bits.
She's a food critic, and he's a restaurateur, and he's there, like, picking up food on the fork and putting it into her mouth for her. It's, like, the weirdest shit ever.
And, like, let her tiny, eat her own tiny food. Bits. Like, he makes her, like, a lemon tart. And it takes a tiny bit of the curd and it pops it into just on the tip of her tongue.
It's such a weird thing. Give her
some pastry with that. Give her some of that sauce you're putting in. All the food actually looks like someone who comes about third in MasterChef Professionals will cook. Yeah. That's the kind of level he's at. It's a lot of sauces and bottles, mousses.
I'm allergic to bell peppers, so there was a couple of close-ups of bell peppers that made me
squirm.
What
happens if you have a bell pepper?
It shuts down my gastrointestinal system. I have a bit of a nightmare.
Wow.
Would you die or would you just need a bathroom?
It's a long story, but about 24 hours of difficulty.
Okay.
I just don't eat them. They ruin my life.
I don't eat cinema popcorn because of the cinema. Oil in it gives my stomach terrible trouble. Whatever oil they use in cinema popcorn, just every time I've eaten it, I've gotten ill. And I love it because like I'll be in cinema and I'll eat loads of people. And then like I'm later on that night, I'm like, oh, I need hospital.
But is it an oil they only use in the cinema?
It's because I don't, I wouldn't eat too, I wouldn't cook that much.
Okay.
I'm a modern woman from the 90s because all modern women now cook and make candles from beeswax.
And ears.
And it takes supplements for contraception. So I'm like a woman of the 90s in that I don't cook. So yeah, I wouldn't be like frying that much stuff. And I think there must be some oils. I don't know. I couldn't be arsed going to a nutritionist's living room to do a test that probably doesn't work to find out what exactly I should be avoiding. Mm. So I'll just go with intuitive eating, is it? Whatever your tummy likes. Yeah. So yeah, cinnamon popcorn. They're always like, oh, do you want popcorn with that? And I'm like, no, that makes me violently ill. And then the boy doesn't know where to look.
Maybe you're just allergic to the cinema and that's why you love these made for TV movies so much.
No, I have a Cinderella card in there also. I'm like, I use that card.
I'm thinking,
I'm
going to
go see Bad Mom's Christmas too. Or Bad Mom's Christmas. That's what
you
that's
go to see
a very strong cast.
Never see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Christine Baranski.
Yeah. Is she in it?
Yeah.
And Kristen Bell, Mila Kunis.
Yeah.
All the big hitters.
Must have made him a load of money, the first one. So then Alex or Bobby, whatever his name, goes on a date with JJ and her mom salsa dancing, which I thought was really strange.
It was the opening of a salsa club as well, because Christine Baranski took the invite on her behalf, so she had to go. Also, they get to the salsa club and Christine Baranski says they're playing her favorite song, and I'm pretty sure it's like the song's called like Latin Groove Number 6 from a background music CD.
Yeah.
It's very, very generic.
Have you ever gone to Zumba?
No, I played the Wii Zumba, which I got quite good at actually.
Yeah, but they play all that kind of music at Zumba, like knockoffs of what's that song, Uptown Funk with a bit of salsa type.
Okay, yeah.
They'll play like one little bit of it and just play that for the 10 minutes. It's great fun.
Something I didn't know until watching this film is that she says to the Brazilian, is he Brazilian, the restaurateur?
Greek, I think, at the end. So it turns out at the end he's Greek.
Someone's Brazilian. Is it? And she's like, oh, do you like salsa? And he's like, no, because salsa's like not a Brazilian thing. And then when they go to the Brazilian place and they're playing like whatever they're playing, it's like not Brazilian music either. I saw this online. Someone was complaining about the representation of Brazilian music. And they said if it was real Brazilian, it would be like either samba or bossa nova.
That is true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they're playing all these other songs.
Just like that Michael Palin Around the World double VHS we had in the house.
The things I learned from this terrible, terrible movie.
Did you not like it?
I did not like it.
Oh. Interesting.
I didn't know how I was going to make it. Like 20 minutes in, I was...
It's okay to dislike the movies. We were pretty divisive on some of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The point is you watched it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you got through it.
Christine Baranski's watchable and everything.
I would not recommend this to somebody looking for a Christmas.
I am very glad that she got The Good Wife, that she doesn't have to do that kind of film anymore.
And she got The Good Fight as well.
Yes, which is amazing.
She's a great lady.
Yeah.
Do you notice JJ and the mom are in the car and they put Bobby Cannavale between them and they're kind of fighting over him, and the mom is like, oh, I love salsa on the way to the club, like showing that she's a dancey type. Yeah.
Yeah.
But then JJ's like, oh, I'm reading a book about World War II and the food shortages. And you're like, okay, good for you, JJ. Right. Probably didn't need to read a book, could have read Wikipedia. This food podcast shortages. Has established every episode is my favorite website.
500 pages on food shortages.
Yeah. You like, could have gotten 3 paragraphs of that done with links to other references.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what a waste of everyone's time. Mm-hmm. This movie was also called Smothered, or was a pre-production title was called Smothered.
Smothered, because it has the word mother in it.
Yeah, which I thought was a very dark fact about the movie.
Yeah.
And it's the reason Bobby, before we started recording, I said to Bobby, I was worried that maybe Bobby shouldn't have been the person who reviewed this, because it's about dark mother-daughter relationships and that kind of hate. And I was thinking maybe this is me being sexist, isn't it? Maybe a woman should have reviewed it. So what did you two, as cisgender men, that's the term, what did you two make of the mother-daughter relationship? I'm intrigued to find out.
It's very deep.
Yeah.
It seemed like they were both, like, it turns out they're both still not dealing with the death of their father and husband. And they're both kind of blaming each other for not being there for each other.
Mm.
And they're both, they are quite oblivious to each other's needs, I think. which I don't know. I'm not sure if that's a specific mother-daughter. Is there anything specifically mother-daughter in that kind of challenge, do you think?
What I find interesting about her resenting the mother being in her space is like, you know, you were in the mother's space for 18 years.
Yeah.
I'm interested at the moment at looking at like intergenerational living. I'll probably read a Wikipedia article on it. And just kind of, I find as I get older, I find people who don't want to look after their parents a bit weird. But like, I know everyone has history, but I figure like, I don't know. I think she should have given her mother a break.
Yes.
And I found, I know that they had their issues, but I just felt like life's too short. And now Joan Rivers once said, and I always remember this, like her last phone call with her mother was an argument. And then her mother died. And she, like, I think she said, and she, maybe it was Joan Rivers, like, you know, don't ever do that. And like, it was really painful for her to deal with.
Yeah.
And I just felt that JJ should have watched a Joan Rivers interview on YouTube sometime.
Well, her mother didn't tell her the full story about having to sell the house and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
She just kind of turned up unannounced. And if she had have kind of not come clean to her, but had a heart to heart, like, I'm going through a difficult time, blah, blah, she probably would have been more understanding.
Mm.
But because she just kind of turned up and started being a kind of OTT wrecked ahead.
She sold the house and then lived rent free on a cruise ship.
Yeah.
And somehow spent all the house money in a year.
Cruises are expensive.
She was working on it though. So she was you live rent free on the ship.
Could have been lawyers' fees. The father could have had not have life insurance. Yeah, and he might have had a few outstanding debts and stuff, or maybe he hadn't paid off the house in its entirety, because some people have to do that when their parents die. If the mortgage, if your parent dies under a certain age and the mortgage isn't paid off, sometimes the bank forces you to sell.
In Ireland, the bank, they make you get life insurance when you get a mortgage. Yeah, but I think for the mortgage.
Back in the day, maybe not.
Yeah.
Maybe didn't have a mortgage or something, or maybe he just had outstanding payments. Loans.
When JJ goes over to that house on Long Island, and who's the woman living there? Is
Dottie.
And who's that? A friend of hers from childhood.
Yeah.
And Dottie bought it.
She says, oh, I haven't seen your mother since I bought the house from her a year ago. And JJ's like, what? And like, she's like, oh yeah, you didn't know I bought the house from her. But like, imagine buying the house from someone and just leaving everything exactly as it is. Leave the couches there, leave their possessions, their little Christmas decorations and stuff.
Yeah, so like Christmas decorations.
If you walked into a house that someone had bought a year ago, you'd be like, oh, okay, you've changed the whole place. What's going on here? She was just like, oh, I didn't even realize, because nothing is different.
So I'm single white female, Joe.
Just left it the exact same. No personality.
But JJ finds her mom. They have their big argument. So that's how she ends up at the house. She's looking for her mom after she calls the mother loads of names and is like, Bobby Cannavale was only going out with you because he wanted me to eat at his restaurant. And the mom gets really upset. And also she's after fucking up the computer. So she's real frustrated. And she ends up working in the bar, and the daughter and her reunite. They say they're sorry.
Oh, before that, she goes back to the flat and finds that Christine Bransky has kept all her childhood photos. And she has an amazing picture. It's obviously a real picture of Christine Bransky holding her actual baby from like 20, 30 years ago. But she's like standing in front of a door with her name on it, and she's like in a full showgirl outfit.
Wow.
But it's like young Christine Bransky holding a baby up like Simba. It's a really good photo. I'm surprised you didn't notice it.
I didn't notice that.
Yeah,
I watched
really
this one very late last night.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is quite far into the film as well, so you're probably flagging by then.
Yeah.
Yeah, Bobby definitely was.
Yeah.
And,
well, that's when she said, oh, I don't think my mom's ever read an article that I wrote, but it turns out she kept all the clippings. Yeah. All the clippings.
I know someone that happened to.
Really?
I can't delve into it.
Okay.
But I'll say yes afterwards.
Name and shame.
You know, it's a really nice story.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll come back to it.
So that that all happens, and then they reunite, and then they're going to the... they're going to make Bobby's restaurant a big, massive success.
Mm-hmm.
The mother slaps the daughter into a bandage dress, a purple bandage dress.
That's a bad dress.
They were very popular back in the day. I got very nostalgic because I would have worn something along those lines when I was in college. You know, when you didn't have any body fat because you were drinking so much and you just wake up smelling of chicken nuggets and wine, but you didn't put on any weight. It was great. So you just wear whatever you want. You can wear whatever you want anyway. But yeah, I was like, oh, college, because Ireland got the trends a bit later. And then they arrive at the restaurant and they whole magazine go, because turns out JJ's article that she lost and the one she replaced it was a big success.
Because she was inspired by her mother pouring four different cereals into the one bowl. And yeah. after 3 weeks waiting for inspiration, she wrote an article about like apple, like mixing Apple Jacks with Rice Krispies and Fruit Loops and something else. And the pillows, the wheat pillow thing.
Yeah, because she'd done that earlier in the film.
Yeah.
The cereal cafe.
She invented
Maybe they watched this movie. she wrote the cereal cafe.
So that was the whole movie was leading up to this article about mixing her cereal together and about how it made her, like it was a Ratatouille kind of moment as well.
Yeah.
It was. Is that pre-Ratatouille?
No. Ratatouille would have been a few years after that.
Yeah, so it's pre-Ratatouille, yeah.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
and they all bring their own tables to the restaurant because Bobby Cannavale has lost.
They bring
the
all
tables.
The office furniture. To
yeah.
The
it's like a bring a chair party.
And they have a load of success. And that's the movie. Did you like it? You didn't?
I did. One other thing. JJ's boss, we've said, had a girlfriend. That's why the original food critic got fired. End of the film, he's flirting away with Christine Bransky, doing shots of ouzo with her.
Yeah.
Girlfriend's just disappeared. Now she's no longer convenient.
But also, she didn't like how he handled it. She probably wants to bring charges or something. And she was like, I don't like your time to kill view of justice, bro. So
you're out of here.
I watched A Time to Kill recently and I read all the articles about it and how it caused controversy with its view of justice. So
what's A Time to Kill? A Bond film?
No, that's A View to a Kill with the Duran Duran song, which is shot at the Eiffel Tower. A Time to Kill is the John Grisham adaptation.
Okay.
It's the book he wrote before The Firm, like before he became proper famous. Yeah. And Matthew McConaughey starred in it.
And I tried to get into that in the cinema when I was 12.
Oh, it's extremely violent.
Yeah, because I went up.
It's more violent than a lot 18? Of stuff out at the moment. Yeah.
It was 15, so I went with my 14-year-old friend. 18. And so they were going to let him in because he said he's 14. And then she said, what age are you? And I said, I assumed if I maturely admitted that I was 12, she would recognize my maturity and let me into the 15s film. So I went,
that's the way it works, right?
I'm 12. And she went, I'm not letting you into that. I was like, oh, and then we had to walk home. And then I'm 12 was the bullying catchphrase aimed at me for entire summer. Whenever I did that, it wrong.
So
whenever I did anything wrong, someone would go, I'm 12. Like, fuck.
I'm 12 and what is this?
Oh, it's a... Yeah. Scary film.
Yeah, I'm probably good that I didn't see it.
But like Paul Newman and a bunch of people turned down the role of Donna Sutherland in it because it is pro, what's it when you beat the shit out of people yourself?
Vigilanteism?
It's pure vigilanteism, justice. Thought it was an interesting movie.
I still haven't seen it. It's too traumatic to
Ashley Judd is in it and it's in the Deep South, but she's like sopping wet in every scene because of like it's the summer, so they just have her like she's just her skin is checks up in a pool the entire movie and it's really strange because every scene you're like, oh, here she is, and like nobody else in the movie sweats that much, but Ashley Judd has blonde hair in it and like is a former sorority queen or something, and they have her in like
they're
little white
spraying her before
tops. Yeah, it's really disconcerting, like it's definitely not water, they have like olive oil on her or something and it's
popcorn
really
oil.
Distracting in a movie about rape and murder and all this, and then you've got like Ashley Judd just, I don't know, like
doing
a little golden machine. That's the only funny part of the movie, but that's not even funny now, you know.
Yeah.
So watch it if you get a chance, though. It's the opposite of this film in terms of tone and subject matter.
We often said that these films are quite sexless even though they're about romance, but their kiss at the end was quite a good kiss.
Bobby's a good actor.
Yeah,
thank you. who wrote this? Did you guys research that at all?
I researched who directed it, and he is director of one of my favorite vintage made for TV movies.
Oh, really?
Go on.
Sheldon Lowery directed the Christmas classic Romance, which Olivia Newton-John, it's called A Christmas Romance.
Oh.
Where she plays a woman who bakes these kind of Christmas cakes and lives in the mountain, and there's a closure on her home and the banker arrives up but gets snowed in and he has to stay with her. And by the end of the trip, he's like, I'm going to own this property with you and I love you. And there's a child in it.
Sounds like misery.
It's like romantic.
Romantic
and,
misery.
So he directed that and he hasn't done much since. He's 68. He could have retired. But he did quite a lot of TV movies. That seemed to have been his jam for the past 20 years.
It seems like a good groove to get into if you can. There's always work in it.
Yeah, you know, like you're going to be busy in the summers and then you're going to be doing your Hallmark channel interview for the website.
They made like 47 Christmas films this year. This is actually a Lifetime movie. This isn't a Hallmark film.
Oh, this is a Lifetime,
yeah.
This
is the first Lifetime film we've done. They're edgier
than
Hallmark films. This is an edgy, made-for-TV Christmas movie.
Because there was pole dancing in a reference to gay marriage.
Actually, yes. Both those things would not be in Hallmark.
Yeah, they would
movie.
Not be in Hallmark.
Yeah. And also probably that kiss at the end is probably because it's not Hallmark.
Yeah. Well, Bobby Cannavale is a good actor. Vinyl was pretty terrible. I only watched clips of it. The one that was made by Mick Jagger produced it for HBO about the foundation of the rock music record, whatever.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
That kind of stuff. You being stopped Bobby being a musician.
No. Oh, absolutely not.
Yeah.
Bobby's garbage. Indie. So releases all the stuff himself, don't you?
I sometimes do.
Yeah. He takes sometimes ownership of his projects.
Yeah.
He's very good at Master of None season two as well.
Don't watch Master of None.
Master of None. Yeah, Bobby Cannavale is very good in it.
He was good in Spy.
He's actually a chef in that as well.
He's good in Spy.
This could actually be a prequel to Master of None because he's a huge celebrity chef in season two that gets done for sexual harassment.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I noticed that his next movie is a Scorsese movie called The Irishman, and it's about the Irish-American mob co-starring Robert De Niro and Al Pacino, and it's Bobby Cannavale or whatever. Mm. So we've that to look forward to next year, The Irishman. Yeah.
He actually seems very nice.
Although I kind of feel about every movie that's coming out next year, will it come out?
Yeah.
Somebody will be...
What's going to happen? Yeah.
The lighting assistant.
Yeah, so you'll never know. So I think it's in production at the moment.
Robert De Niro?
I might see it.
Maybe.
Who knows? Let's not speculate, just in case. But.
Head stuff lawsuit.
Yeah.
He was in Ant-Man.
Oh, he was. He's the cop in Ant-Man. Yeah.
Oh.
The stepdad.
I'm looking else. Oh, he's in I, Tonya. He's in Jumanji, the new one.
The new Jumanji,
Okay.
He's in Mr. Robot. God, the vinyl poster looks pretty terrible there. It's like something from 5 years ago. Oh, he's in Daddy's Home.
Oh, there you go.
Which, unfortunately, we keep discussing. I've seen him in something else, though. Oh, he was in Chef. Was that what I saw him in? It's in Blue Jasmine. Haven't seen Blue Jasmine. Never will see Blue Jasmine.
No. So Bobby Cannavale has kind of like a good celebrity chef vibe off him. He's kind of like Anthony Bourdain, but like Hollywood good looking.
Anthony Bourdain, every woman I know fancies him.
But Hollywood.
I'm generalizing
Hollywood
there.
Good looking.
Well, this Cannavale guy seems to... the phrase eye candy popped up a lot when I was looking at reviews.
Oh, Bobby?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's quite sexy for these movies because the guys in it, like, they can be good looking, but they're not like, you know, you don't really fancy them.
Yeah.
You're like, with Bobby Cannavale, you're like, if I met him in real life, I would fancy him.
Mm-hmm.
I fancy him on the screen. A 3D version would
I've
be
seen
great.
Him in real life.
Oh, yes. You mentioned this.
I went to see Oh Hello, you know, John Mulaney and Nick Kroll's show on Broadway.
Yeah.
And they have a celebrity guest every show. They come on and like interview as in character as old men.
Yeah.
So the night I was there was Bobby Cannavale.
Really?
Yeah. They basically ripped the piss out of vinyl for 15 minutes into his face. So it was good.
I think they knew pretty early on.
He seemed really sound.
Like
he was into it. So yeah.
Oh, he was in Sex and the City. I remember him in that.
Yeah.
Will and Grace or something. Did that pop up on the.
Oh, did he go out with her in Will and Grace?
I think I saw it.
I'm not sure I've seen a full episode of Will and Grace.
No.
Can't really remember that show that well.
So do we have any stray observations before we finish up?
Well, I think in this movie, she gets this big opportunity to be this food critic thing, and she screws it up. And then at the end, she helps Bobby Cannavale's restaurant, and she gets all these people around there. And then he's in the kitchen, and they're having this like heart to heart, and they start smooching and stuff, which hygiene laws, I don't know, a bit smooching. So every time they get an opportunity, they're just like, get distracted and start doing something else. It's like, just take your opportunity, guys.
She probably isn't in the right career.
You think?
Because it takes her so long to focus on it.
Yeah.
Mm.
Meanwhile, he is focused on that restaurant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, he is. I know like smooching gets in the way, but he knows what he wants to do.
Yeah, he's even willing to get into like a weird.
Yeah, I think JJ and her mother are
situation.
Lost.
Yeah.
Yeah. I enjoyed this film. It was a bit of a trek to get through because I watched it super late last night. And it was a bit all over the place. But I thought it had some really interesting vibes to it in that the representation of media in it had some stuff that I don't see anywhere else. Like the baskets and freebies thing coming in. And
that was good,
so
actually.
Much.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you don't see that in a lot of things.
Do you mind if I take one of these for my mother-in-law?
Yeah, and that kind of like, so much stuff comes in and the freebies. Mm. And I don't really see that in a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And that is, I think there's like a lot of, they call it piorhe. So the kind of the stuff used in the hampers.
Oh,
to
yeah,
hold
yeah.
stuff. So that's called piorhe. And it changes every year. It's like different qualities. Sometimes it's like recycled newspapers. Other times it's like, you're like, I don't want to know what this material is. It's probably full of whatever that bad plastic is. And I thought that was a really interesting part of it.
Piorhe.
Piorhe, like yeah.
I've never heard that before.
Yeah.
So, and you get tons of baskets. Like there's so many baskets in every media office. Hmm. And I thought it was a really, so someone involved in this obviously worked in media.
Or yeah. did some research, yeah. Did some
or they had a friend. Or no, they definitely worked in because there's some aspects to it that were true.
Both of the jobs in this field are felt realer than the jobs we've seen people do in the other films.
Yeah.
Like I feel that if you got a professional chef in to do his meals and stuff.
Yeah.
And the demands of like most restaurants failing and just sometimes just, it's just being one review is the only difference between it. That feels real.
Yeah.
As opposed to like the graphic designer job and the web job in A Wish for Christmas that we did.
Yeah.
Which is completely and utterly unrealistic.
Yeah. That girl definitely did not know how to code.
No.
Yeah.
Well, maybe the one review will make or break this business thing is a bit old fashioned at this point, even.
That's true.
Like the media doesn't have as much power in that respect. And like, would a magazine review really make or break a business at this point in time?
Well, this magazine review was so powerful that it hadn't even been released yet. And they're all turning people away. There's strangers coming up going, sorry, no, it was the half 10.
I suppose so. When you saw one of A.A. Gill's articles where he tore into Ballymaloe there two years ago. And actually, I think the reaction that was loads of people went to Ballymaloe because they were pissed off at him slagging it.
Oh, so it worked the opposite way.
Yeah, but no, I think like A.A. Gill, that kind of stature could make or break something.
Or again, like a New Yorker review. So we're all food critics now, apparently.
Everyone is a food critic now.
Yeah.
We have the cameras, we have the captions, mm-hmm. we self-publish.
That's true.
Yeah, so everyone is a publisher now. And I kind of love it.
Yeah.
Because, I don't know, I like it. I like that everyone has their own way of talking complete and utter shite.
Yeah. So. And have a mouthpiece for it too.
Yeah. Why not? Like people get annoyed, like people in media get really annoyed at bloggers and influencers and I just think it's really funny.
Yeah.
Oh, they're all going to get annoyed now that I said that. But I don't think they're
Nobody's
listening.
Really that influential anymore. I mean, everyone's just talking shit.
Yeah. What was that? Some guy had a theory of where he rewrote Andy Warhol's famous to 15 minutes. Mm. Like you're going to be super famous to 15 people.
Mm.
But yeah, it's all bullshit now. Yes. So like, look, we're making a podcast.
Yeah.
Who are we? Influential. Influenza.
Yeah. So like I just think it's great that people can do whatever they want now. If someone wants to like unfortunately people can set up Breitbart now, but like, you know, that's the way the world's going.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Can't be censored. You can be. We'd be great if we could, but unfortunately we can't.
I have another review here from Amazon.
We can cut all that out.
This is from Hedon Tart is the name of the reviewer. She says, I'd watch Christine Baranski and Bobby Cannavale in anything, even a traffic jam. A nice review. Good review of the movie. And then Heidi Jean 25 says,
that's me.
This movie really could have used a different name, I think. Maybe like the Christmas review, so people wouldn't think it's all about food because it's about so much more. And it's true.
There we go.
Love, relationships, family, bribery, nepotism.
Yeah, the bribery was weird.
Mm. The nepotism. I'm going to give a great review to my boyfriend's restaurant.
Yeah.
For sake.
Yeah. There we go.
So
let's leave it there.
It's dark.
Yeah.
So. Thanks, Bobby.
Thank you.
Get all of the Monster Club music on Bandcamp and all those places. Pay for it. That's a good thing to do.
Yeah, love cash.
Yeah. Thanks to Dean McDonald for our artwork.
And thanks to acclaimed Daniel McCauley.
From CCL.
Cloudcastle Lake. From a Nabokov short story.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you know that? The one about the Nazis on holidays.
I haven't read it.
Yeah, it's on The Atlantic for free. So.
There you go. Go read The Atlantic, everybody. And we'll see you next week with a film we haven't decided on yet.
Oh, yeah. I have a few ideas, though.
Okay. We'll talk about that.
Okay, great.
Bye, everybody. Thank you.
HPN, the Headstuff Podcast Network. See headstuff.org for more details.